The Star Wars Report podcast is brought to you by Sphero. These are the droids you're looking for. Control R2-D2, BB-8, and BB-9E with your smart device. Watch the Star Wars films together, explore holographic simulations, and so many more fun times. All available at a brand new lower price at Sphero.com/Star Wars. Get a free force band with any order while supplies last, and be sure to use code StarWarsReport10 for an extra 10% off.
This week's episode of the Star Wars Report is brought to you by the good folks supporting us over on patreon.com/StarWarsReport.
Let's do the show, folks!
Come, come, come!
And who might you be?
It's the Star Wars Report!
Star Wars Report!
Woo! Star Wars Report! The place for Star Wars news, features, interviews, and more.
Then we can do something epic!
Good morning. Good afternoon. Good evening. Please delete as appropriate.
The Force. It's calling to you. Just let it in.
So, hey, Mark. It's May the 4th as we're recording, and tickets went on sale for Solo. Did you get them?
I've never bought a pre-sale ticket for any Star Wars.
What? Aren't yet. You like nervous that you won't get in?
I have never managed to not get in. I mean, I am always a little worried, especially now that I work at the theater, but I still manage to make it in. Plus, Disney's made it easy where they're like, 3 weeks, no one gets in for free. So I have to pay anyway, but
right.
we go overboard here in Grants Pass. We only have a theater with 12 theaters and they're like, we're going to play it in 8 of them.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Yeah.
They go hardcore.
Saturation.
They got the spread covered, man.
Yeah, because you saw Last Jedi because you worked at the theater. You got to do the pre-screening to make sure it worked, right?
And I got lucky. So technically, Disney's very strict with this stuff. Like, they only let one manager watch it 2D and one manager watch it 3D. And I've lucked out that every time that happens, it's like almost 1 o'clock in the morning. And the manager that's been working has been there since the morning. And he's like, I'm going home, but somebody has to watch it. Do you want to do it? And I'm like, yes, I am there for you. So I've managed to luck out. I'm hoping maybe the same thing with Solo. But even then, though, I'm still there with the opening day with my family. And that's 5 of us. So yeah. And I'm not pre-ordering. Like, I don't know, man. I guess that's the blessing of being in a city that's big, but not too big.
True. Yeah. Now, we've got Pete Morrison with us from RebelsReport.com. Hey, Pete, how you doing?
I'm doing great, guys. It's nice to be back. I don't think I've been on with the Bruce Gibson era, so I'm really...
I don't think you have either. No.
Really
this is
the
first
back.
Time it's talking. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, now, what area are you in, and did you get your tickets?
We just recently moved to Kalamazoo, Michigan.
Zoom tight.
Thank you.
I like that.
And we have a few theaters around, so I did get tickets last night. I was a little disappointed because I was trying to see if I could get into one of those the fan event screenings that's happening at like 6 o'clock, I guess.
Yeah.
Ooh.
But none of the theaters around us within like 100 miles are doing it.
Oh.
So we just got the regular 7 o'clock tickets, but I did, like, there was only like 8 seats sold by the time I went to get my tickets last night at like 1 AM or whenever they were up. So we got like dead center pretty much, so I'm pretty psyched.
See, awesome. And so you guys actually get to pick your seats.
What? Yeah, at the AMC in town we do. There's one downtown that's like at AMC. I guess it used to be a draft house, but they like sold it off to AMC a couple years ago. So.
See, that we don't do here in Grants Pass. Like, if you buy your tickets, it's like a lottery thing. You just hope you find seats in a row next to each other.
Yeah, well, so in Atlanta, it's the same thing. There's theaters that do reserve seating. So I have a reserve seat at Atlantic Station. That's like the place I always end up going for every premiere. It's a 7 o'clock show. But I was looking at a theater closer to my house, and there was a 3D showing at 7 o'clock, and they were charging $35 a ticket, which I think had to be a typo, because $35 a ticket doesn't make sense, because the 2D was only like $17.
Yeah. I mean, do they have 35 members of the 501st lined up for photo ops? Like, I mean, then maybe I'd be willing to shell out that kind. Like, if the environment going into the theater and coming out feels like I'm actually on Naboo.
Right. It's got to be something big if I'm going to spend $35 on a ticket.
They're like, here's a tray of Wookiee cookies. They're chewy. You're like, no. Chewy. They're not even looking like Wookiees, man. You just underbaked those.
Well, the 1030 was only like $20. So I don't know.
Yeah, we just moved from San Diego, and like the San Diego tickets for like the IMAXs, we had like an IMAX, like a mini IMAX right down the road, and those were like $28-$30 almost for like just a regular IMAX ticket.
Oh, yeah.
So it's some of it depends on where you are, I guess, because some of the prices are like out here, it's a lot cheaper than it was in San Diego. So I'm excited.
Like for example, in San Angelo, Texas, they're like $7.
Wait, is that a Force ghost I'm hearing? Who is
Texas?
That?
Everything's bigger in Texas, even Riley's Force presence.
Riley.
How's it going, guys?
Good. Hey. How are you? What, have you been here the whole time?
I've been here. I've never left. I've just been sitting here the whole time. I've just
you were here
you
last week
up.
When we recorded the last episode.
Just
the
whole
he thing. Never left.
He had to have been sick. I can't imagine him not talking.
No. I'm actually, because I can't be out for the whole show tonight, but I couldn't resist. I was missing all you guys, even though I only missed last week, but I was driving out here to Texas. Where I'm being for a permanent change of station with these United States Air Force. So I've been doing all that fun in-processing stuff. Let me tell you guys. So, A, tickets, not even on sale. Like, they're two tiny local theaters. And neither of them have updated their website. And they're both, one is like a Cinemark. And that's kind of the crappier one. There's a small private chain. I think it's called Icon Cinema or something like that. A private theater that's pretty nice. So I'm going to try to, as soon as that comes up, I'm going to get my Thursday night tickets and see it right here in Texas.
Nice.
But also the other funny thing about the military, a lot of nerds, and I've mentioned on the show before. Number two, I was shocked at the level of Star Wars presence on base today.
Oh, cool.
So that's awesome. Today was a very exciting day. It's like I got my official ID card. And that process is not unlike the DMV. If the DMV making the DMV look a little bit more like, I don't know, a pleasant half hour exchange,
a fast because, pass at Disneyland,
exactly because it's worse. it is really bad. But I got it done. And so for this huge waiting line of people getting ID cards and getting updates and stuff like that in this office, I look over to my right. I'm talking to two other lieutenants that I just met, and. We're all hanging out for the same thing. And they're like, dude, there were two stormtroopers walking on base a few minutes ago. It's like, wait, what? Really? And I was like, okay, and somebody was wearing stormtrooper t-shirt, right? That's probably what it was. No, because they walked in the room literally with a bucket of candy and flyers from the, you know, MWR office, the morale welfare office.
Nice.
Because they're doing a big Star Wars event tonight. On base, nice. Screening nice. The Last Jedi, and like a bunch of Star Wars themed activities, and
epic.
I was like, okay, you know what? I feel pretty good. Listen, it may be a small town in the middle of West Texas that I'm stationed, but I suddenly feel a lot better about my lot in life.
Did Riley? I don't know. Did you happen to see the Air Force Thunderbirds tweet today?
No, I did not.
They announced they're transitioning to the T-65B X-wing as their new jet.
Dude, yes! That is amazing. It's funny because I often hear, I'm not gonna lie, a little bit of grumpiness when it comes to May the 4th, and I want to push back on that because the level of how mainstream it's gotten to where, you know, like an Air Force base is putting on a big event and the Thunderbirds are doing it, and then like big team, you know, sports teams and companies are all participating. I love it.
Mm-hmm. Wow. I'm with you. There's a lot of people that are like, May 25th is Star Wars Day. I'm like, this is so much more culturally embraced all the way around.
Yeah, this is like a Hallmark holiday. It was created.
Yes, exactly.
This is the Star Wars Hallmark holiday, true.
Well, it makes sense, though, that everybody on the base is all down. Because think about it, right? Star Wars, right? Who's going to compete in wars? It's going to be your military. So, of course, you know, it kind of goes hand in hand.
No, yeah. Exactly. And there's a lot of Star Wars fans in the military, which, you know. I guess it only makes sense.
Well, you're going to be very popular once they find out that you do a podcast.
Yeah.
And that you interviewed several people and you've gone to all the celebrations and all that.
Is that really going to be like my calling card here? Like, I don't know if you know this, but I do a little podcast. I don't know if you heard
of it. Well, I know it does not work when you date, but it would work in the military.
It's so much better than what I'm known for down here. Okay. I picked my daughter up from school yesterday and we're walking through the high school and I'm getting almost to the door and I hear one of the guys, and I guess she tells me he's one of the popular kids in school. He's like, "Everything's better with cheddar." And I turn around. I'm like, "It's the gold standard of cheeses." I mean, cause I've just got everybody at school at the high school comes to my drive through at Subway because I'm just so punned up. But
that is,
yeah, I'm like, I'm not the Star Wars guy there, even though my name on the printout and stuff says Jedi, but no, I'm known as the cheddar guy.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing. I'm not gonna lie, it's not a bad lot in life to be the cheddar guy. I'll be the Star Wars guy over here, you be the cheddar guy over there, and
I'm a big fan of cheddar, Mark, so I got your back.
The circle of life is complete.
It's the Midas touch of cheese flavor.
Mm-hmm.
We have something to report.
Come closer, I have good news.
Data brought to us by the Bothan spies.
You can send a clear transmission.
There it is. Listen.
Oh my gosh. Hey, Riot, can you stay for a little bit in the news so we can talk about the box office of Solo?
Oh, you know what? You know me too well. This is way too much fun of a game. We definitely have to do this before I bounce. So yes, okay. Sounds good.
Because we got several news in Solo, but I want to touch on the box office first. So Mark, what is going on in the news, especially with Memorial Day box office predictions?
Well, could Solo break the Memorial Day box office record? Well, Scott Mettelson, writing for Forbes, he sums up the situation. He says, the first bit of official pre-release tracking is out for Solo, A Star Wars Story, and he says, let me throw in an all-important caveat that A, tracking guesstimates are not an exact science, that's very important, and B, the opening weekend can trend up or down based on one variable over another over the next 3 weeks. With that said, we may be looking at 160 to 170 million. That's Monday through Friday, Memorial Day weekend. That wouldn't be the second biggest. And then, of course, my show notes just jumped really far. Wouldn't be the second biggest because the second Memorial Day launch, sans inflation for 3D bumps and all that, it would be a record launch ahead of the 153 million Friday through Monday debut, counting the Thursday previews of Pirates of the Caribbean at World's End back in 2007. And if you want to adjust for inflation, a 160 million plus Monday through Friday launch would be the fifth biggest Memorial Day weekend debut behind Pirates 3. That was 156 million in 2007 with 204 million adjusted. The Lost World had 92 million in 97 with 180 million adjusted. X-Men The Last Stand, 122 in 2006 with 127 adjusted. And Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, that's even crazy to think that's on the list, 125 million in 2006 and 126 million adjusted. What do you guys think?
So basically the short answer, to put it in Star Wars terms, is it's tracking just ahead of the opening weekend of Rogue One.
Right.
And Rogue One was a knockout, though. That was like a little pre experiment Steve Rogers walking up with the baseball bat and cracking it like he was Captain America. It's like, dude, that just went out the park.
But now, what was Rogue One's total domestic box office?
I'm glad you asked, Bruce, because I have it right here. It was $532
million. $532 million. Okay, so we're going to do our predictions on what Solo's going to do total.
For comparison, I think Last Jedi's, what, up to 600 or so?
Yeah, I think it's just like in the low 600s, something like that.
Domestic, and then, of course, Force Awakens was like 900 and something.
Right.
Biggest of all time. Hyperspace hoopla, mega awesome box office. So this is a fun game. We did this with who was it? It was you, me, I think Aaron and Mark Newbold, right? I believe it was us, Bruce, that did this for The Force Awakens, and that was a fun thing to watch. I won.
Yeah, and you won between us and Last Jedi too.
But the thing that we have to do though is the nice thing is we're using this Zoom. Well, no, we can't because I don't have video. I was about to say that we could like write it down and gamify it, but
it down as soon as you say. I'm going to write it down.
So everyone, yeah, get your post-it note, your sticky note, and a pen, and get going. So we'll each put in domestic. Well, remember, only domestic, because there's too many variables with international. It's hard to keep track of. But write it down, and we'll lock it in right now. So again, we have, which is, this is actually the closest, we've never done it when we had the tracking information. So if the opening weekend, although the difference is that this is also a May release.
Right.
The first Star Wars May release. So does it have, even say if it opens slightly under Rogue One, does it have a longer tail? Is it more successful through the summer? That'll be interesting to kind of watch.
That's a good point. Yeah, because it's a different time of year, so the results may be a little different. So I don't know. Who wants to go first?
Not me.
There's also one other factor I'm going to toss out before we lock in our numbers, and that is the slight chance of Star Wars fatigue. Because the brand Star Wars, I have no idea if this is going to be the case or not, but I wonder if the controversy and conversation around The Last Jedi helps or hurts the bottom line. And part of me thinks that it hurts it in some ways.
It could be both.
Well, it could hurt it, and also, as you're saying, a different time of year. This is summer, where in December there was really not much competition.
That's the thing, yeah. It's just basically Star Wars and nothing else until like, you know, February or something.
Right.
So yeah, because you got, I guess Infinity War just came out, and you'll have Deadpool, but then I know there's a bunch of other summer big tentpoles too. So it'll be interesting to see. But I have locked mine in.
So wait, are we doing the total or just the opening weekend?
So we're going to do the total.
The total. Just
total domestic gross. And I'll kick
us
off if you guys want.
Rogue One was 532 and Last Jedi was in the 600 somewhere.
So this is a total for a year, right?
Total for the first like 4 months, through summer.
Until roughly. Yeah, until DVD release, basically. DVD will come out like August, September, something. Yeah. All right, yeah. No, I guess everyone... give your thumbs up on the old Zoom when you're good. All right, Bruce is done. I'm done. All right, Hurleman's done. And all right, there we go. Pete's done. All right, I'll kick us off since I'm not on video and you can trust that I'm not going to adjust mine based on you guys.
This is like The Price is Right. I'm excited.
I am saying 495 million dollars. I'm shooting under a little bit. Shooting down.
Now, I don't feel so bad because I was going to say 475, so okay. I'm not that far from you.
Okay, all right. There we go. We got Hurleman's number. You know what? Pete, I'm curious. What do you have it at?
I'm going for 575.
Ooh, nice.
Repeat viewers. Repeat viewers.
Yes. So there you go.
I said 551.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Why nice. I didn't say 550? I don't know, but I put 551.
See, and I'm on the fence here because, you know, I'm still not quite super excited for this. I'm kind of like, I'm going to see it. I'm going to be excited because it's Star Wars, but I'm not really sold on the story yet. But every trailer and every little TV bit's got me a little more where I'm like, this looks exciting. But yet I'm not like where I was with The Last Jedi, where it's like, I have got to see this. I'm going to make sure everybody in my family sees this. I'm kind of like, if it's really good, I'll make sure to bring everybody in the extended family. But that's where I worry about the fatigue, like you're talking about, Riley. Like, you know,
yeah.
if they don't do this right with Han Solo,
it's interesting.
You can guarantee other stories won't sell as good.
Exactly. But and then if it goes really well, if it gets closer to Pete's number, like think about that. That's like striking distance of The Last Jedi domestic, which is possible. We will find out. And you know what? Let's make a game of it more instead of just being us. Why don't we – let's invite you guys listening. If you're listening to this, come participate and just shoot us an email, StarWarsReport@gmail.com. And Bruce, you'll get all those emails, and you can tally them up and just file them away in our back pocket, and we can revisit and see which one of the listeners got closest to.
Yes, and then we'll have a grand prize of something.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. No.
Whatever that would be.
Grand prize of bragging rights.
Bragging rights.
No.
We'll have you on the show to brag. That's what it would be.
I was right!
Exactly. Oh, well, gentlemen, I do actually have to bounce out. But Bruce, listen, continue the awesome work kind of carrying the flag here. And, you know, I will be back on fairly regularly in the coming months. It's just the next few weeks are a little bit hairy.
I didn't think you'd ever come back.
You just thought like that'd be it.
That would be
no. We all saw you when you walked out this house that day. You're like, freedom, tearing off the shirt.
No, I'll tell you what I did do. So in my it took me 2 days to drive out here, with all of my worldly possessions in my tiny little Scion TC. And what did I do as I drove out of my driveway? Just blasted the Indiana Jones theme. Nice. On my way out here. New adventure. But all right, I'll see you guys soon. And listen, a few weeks, Solo. I'm excited to talk about it.
Yes, definitely. All right. Thanks all right. for joining us.
Till next
we'll
time.
See you next time. Yep.
Later.
Thank you for writing Star Tours. Wait, that comes at the end.
No, you can do that now.
Bye bye.
Bye bye. He loves saying that.
He does. I got him addicted.
I know. Well, it was funny because I rode Star Tours with him a couple months ago, and that came on. We both looked at each other and said it with it. Bye bye. Nice. It was like, nice. Great. Anyway, so what else that we got going good. On, Mark?
Well, the other one, they're like a quasi, like little featurettes, not so featurettes. You know, our last bit of news that deals with the latest Solo Star Wars story featurettes have been splashing up on our feeds across the web. I know, Bruce, you've been staying up to date on all that, and there's a big one you're breaking down. Did you have a chance to check out the tour on the Millennium Falcon with Donald Glover?
Oh, my gosh, I did. Well, you know, one of the big features that you mentioned we're going to get into later in the show and really go real deep into it. But that tour of the Millennium Falcon feature with Donald Glover was so awesome. The first time I saw it, I think it was at work, and I couldn't really watch it. And I was like, oh, well, I've seen the Falcon. I've seen pictures. I don't know if I need to watch it. But then I watched it. It was so awesome to see Donald Glover going around and just showing you the whole interior, like places mm-hmm. we've never seen before in the Falcon. And of course, it all looks new and pristine and clean and everything. It was pretty awesome. What about you, Pete? Did you see it?
I just want to kind of have that the captain's quarters as my room. Like he's got that ship decked out. It was pretty sick. I saw it. I was excited. I'm very confused and concerned about Han Solo and his cleanliness habits.
Right?
Because he wrecked that joint.
Yeah, in 10
I was
years.
Like, there is a bed above the chair with the Dejeric table? Like, how in the hell did I not ever notice this?
I didn't notice that until I think it was The Force Awakens was the first time I ever noticed that.
So you noticed it before. So yeah, him pointing that out, I was like, I've got to go back and watch the movies again. I was like, was that really there the whole time? I mind floored. I had heard about this, though, that people were seeing this in like the newbie reel before the trailers and stuff at movie theaters, although it wasn't at mine. But then I was like thinking like, when are we ever going to get to see this? And then bam, it hit the internet. And I was just like, oh my God, what gloriousness. The fact they got so many really cool little features that just feel so Lando Calrissian with the music and stuff. But yeah, I'm with you, Pete. Like the level of filth and disgusting habits that Han and Chewie must endure over that period of time. I'm kind of like the farther back that Lando, you know, that he owned it, the better. Cause I'm kind of hoping this movie does like kind of what Last Shot does, where we jump a little bit in time, but like, let's have some distance there. So it's not like they did this all in a 4 or 5 year period. Like let it be like 10 years or something. Cause it's disgusting.
Yeah. So what do you think happened to the Falcon like years later? Why it ended up being disgusting? Cause I'm assuming, and maybe we'll see it in the movie part of this, but I'm just assuming they got in so many battles and it got, you know, just scorched and with smoke and from things blowing apart from fighting TIE fighters or whatever. So I don't know.
Yeah. Like just going into like when we first got the first trailers and teasers for the movie, my assumption was that like much of the grime was just built up from smuggling spice off of Kessel. Like that, the spice and the mine dust just gets everywhere. So that was my guess, but I don't know, just based on the newer trailers, I don't know if that really fits what we're seeing.
I think Darlene Connor said it best. It's a decoration style called poverty. I mean, think about it. Han's going to get into the smuggling. He's probably going to fall in debt. And he'll probably never be able to do anything but fix the ship and keep it running. You know, like I think about my Dodge Durango, right? It's really nice. Leather seats, heated seats, all this stuff. But the driver's side, the heat only works at the butt. It doesn't work in the back anymore. And that's a $400 repair. I'm like, I don't need to have heat all the way up my back. My window's not going up and down anymore, but hey, it's stuck up. It's functioning. I'm not getting wet outside. I don't need to fix that. You know, it's just all these things are little trivial luxuries, man. We got to keep this ship running.
You know, what I'd like to see is a sequel to the Solo movie that takes place after New Hope and after Han gets his reward from Leia for saving her from the Death Star. He pimps out his ride and it's nice and clean and perfect again. And by the time you get to Empire Strikes Back, it looks like crap again.
There was one of the books in Legends where they did that, where they took it all the way down to the frame and rebuilt it up. And, like, in a matter of a few years, Haunted already trashed it again. Like, man, you are hard on your ship.
That's why Chewie can never go home to Kashyyyk, because if he does, Han just destroys it.
Right? He's like, he turns to Maul, and he's just like, if I leave him alone for a day, one day, I'm like, 5 years of repairs.
Well, I did like the food and coffee bar in there. I thought that was pretty cool. And then the walk-in cape room with all Lando's capes and furs and things. It's like, I mean, I've never got excited about looking in a closet before, but this one I was.
Well,
right?
Capes are awesome. I think we need to make them like come back into fashion. But
it's true.
It's fun seeing Donald Glover just do all this stuff because, you know, he's going to steal the movie. I'm just going to say it right now. So seeing him do this stuff is just fun. You know, you can see him geeking out when he gets into the cockpit and he's doing the hyperdrive. And he's just like geeking out while he's going around and doing stuff. It's just fun seeing these actors actually enjoying the job and what they're doing.
Hey, I'm Donald Glover, and this is the Millennium Falcon. Come on, let me show you around. These are the living quarters. One of my favorite places on the ship. Everything's patent leather. We got the sound system. It's pretty great. You don't want to touch any of this. Up here, we have the guest quarters. Pretty awesome space. Over here, we have one of my favorite places on the ship. Food and coffee bar. Make you a drink if you want, you know? This ship has probably never looked better than when Lando kind of had it. Ta-da! This is where the magic happens. We got everything here. These pillows are made from actual Kajak hair. That's not easy to get. Listen to some tunes if I want to. But I think the coolest part of this entire ship is in here. The cape room. I got every cape, okay? I got an everyday cape. Sister's wedding cape. Intergalactic President's Day cape. This is just if someone gets cold cape. I got everything you could probably ever ask for in here. And here is the cockpit. Here we are, in the cockpit. You made it. Over here, we have the sliders, light up buttons. But I think the coolest part of the ship has to be the hyperdrive. And you get into hyperdrive like this. I never get tired of that.
This is also the first time I realized that the actual yoke on that is an actual plain one. I never saw Han grab the steering yoke. It always looked like he was sliding levers and doing like a Star Trek thing. I'm like looking at him like, wait a minute, that's legitimately a steering yoke. So I started looking it up and stuff to see exactly what it was. I was just like, they actually took a legitimate plane. That's pretty damn clever. And the fact that it sits so low that I've never noticed it is like, huh, I must be very unobservant when I'm watching these movies.
I never noticed it either. And I mean, you know, been watching these things for 40 years and it's still I'm discovering things I never noticed before.
Yeah, I'm like he grabbed that one lever and he like threw it over to the side and the whole ship did a little flip. So I'm like, man, these are some cool modifications. Tell me that he did that. And that's like Lando's like, I should probably just let you have the ship. Like, you know, I made it look good. It looked great, but you made it dance like a top. All right. Well, our next one is hashtag Roar for Change. There's a little documentary on that. I almost want to call it a mockumentary because I feel like to a degree we are kind of mocking the Force for Change with this. But it is Chewbacca's got this record and upload your best Chewbacca roar to Facebook, Instagram, Twitter between May 3rd and the 25th. Force for Change will donate $1 up to $1 million to UNICEF USA to support global nutrition programs of the United Nations Children Fund, UNICEF. So I myself, I'm looking forward to doing this. Going to do it with my kids. It just looks like fun in general. But I thought it was kind of a fun little video too. The way that they had it all set up was great.
Hello, I'm Ron Howard. I'm here on the set of the new movie, Solo, a Star Wars story.
I'm putting together a crew. You in?
That's yes.
Without a doubt, this is Chewbacca's best role ever.
Well, what do you know?
The problem with him is, in his eyes, this is his movie. So he's become a little bit big for his boots. Yeah, he's getting ideas above his station now.
Chewie's a complete diva.
There's a whole team of people that are just there to groom this huge beast.
And tough on the crew. Pretty tough.
Chewie may not always have the best temperament, but you know what? Beneath the gruff exterior is a heart of gold. That's why Chewbacca is challenging you to roar for change. Just record and upload your very best Chewie roar. Post, like, or share using the hashtag #RoarForChange to support a donation of up to $1 million toward UNICEF's life-saving work for children. Wherever you are, you can be a force for change this Star Wars Day. Now it's your turn to roar for change. Learn more at forceforchange.com.
So, Pete, can you do a Chewbacca roar?
I can, at least better than my wife. she kind of sounds like an Ewok being strangled doing a Chewbacca roar, but we... But I don't know about without a warm up, so we can.
I can't.
We can. See, that's the best I can do without
that's
warming
great.
Up.
I thought that was perfect. Oh, Mark, that's good. I can't. I'm not even. Like, I'll try just because you guys did it, but I'm not even coming close. Someone's like. Okay, I sound like a dead Ewok or something.
That's a sound when an Ewok gets trapped between two logs.
I can't do like the rolling R's and stuff because when I took a Spanish, Spanish classes in college, I couldn't do that. Yeah, I can't do that stuff.
Nice. Well, the other one is that there are new Forces of Destiny shorts out there, which was interesting because, like,
I was expecting this to be long, right?
Yeah. These are micro series shorts, kind of like the old Gendy series. They all hit the Disney YouTube. And I literally watched all of these in the 20 minutes before we recorded. They're all like 2 minutes long, 2 minutes, 30 seconds long. They're super short. Really, there's no excuse. Like, I make excuses to not watch them all the time. But then I sat down and in 20 minutes, I knocked them all out. There's Traps and Tribulations, which, you know, I just had to write some things down with each of these. Because I never really watched all of the first Forces of Destiny. I just caught whichever ones came across my thing. But I noticed with this one, Luke sounds so much older than Return of the Jedi Luke. Mm. Like, he sounds like straight The Last Jedi Luke. It's like Hamill didn't even try to make himself sound younger. He was just very wise and sage in everything he did and said. Chopper and Friends... That one was fun. Chopper's got a new crew that got very lucky. The Ewoks. I don't think there was any skill involved. I'm actually not quite sold on Ewoks. And it seems like canon right now is really pushing the whole Ewoks can do anything anyone else can do. And I'm just not quite buying it. Like, they're just teddy bears to me. I still haven't given them the intelligence they're clearly due. We have A Perilous Pursuit. That one was a fun little chase. The characters felt legit. You knew exactly where this one takes place. And I think for me, that was the one that made me like this one the most. It was with Finn and Rey. They're literally being chased. This is in The Force Awakens when they go from being at Starkiller Base to closer to where the Falcon's at. She still got Finn's jacket on. It's like the deleted scene, so I thought that was kind of cool. The Disarming Lesson. Now, this one was really good. I really enjoyed this one. It had awesome use of the music, but the only thing that threw me off was that everything sounded very echoey. It sounded like the lines were recorded inside a tin room. Which, you know, might have made more sense, like with art history, where they actually have Mandalorian helmets on. So that effect sounded like it was on purpose. That also was a great episode in general. I thought it was awesome. And then there was Monster Misunderstanding, which that one kind of creeped me out. I was like, it was that big sea monster and he's out of the water banging the building. And I'm like, the first thing I think, and I'm like, good Lord, they come out of the water. Like, those things were scary enough as it was. We're going to make it like Godzilla here. But by the time the episode gets over, we find out that no, some poachers have stole, you know, Mama's baby. Mama's actually coming on land. Even the dialogue is like, they don't normally come to land. So I'm like, okay, this isn't as scary. It's still scary, but they don't come out all the time. Okay, so it's not like full on Godzilla mode, but we have a moment here. It's almost like Pacific Rising. Well, see, but she immediately goes inside, finds the baby, lets the baby go, and it's all happy, copacetic moment.
So I haven't watched all these yet. I mean, I was hoping to before we did this, but. Is there any Star Wars characters in Monster Misunderstanding? Like that we are...
That one's Padme. It's just Padme. It's all on Naboo. In fact, and she's like super smart. Like, they're all like, we don't know what's going on. This thing's banging against. She's like, well, let's go inside. They go inside. There's this little baby caught up in a thing with some little bounty hunter Mandalorian type looking poachers. It's like, well, let's free the baby. Like, well, we didn't think about that. So it's kind of, you know, kind of funny. The last one though was Porgs, and it's a chewy one. It felt like an RPG side quest, though. Kind of like when you're in KOTOR and you're like, go to Tatooine and you're doing something. You're like, hey, but we can go over here and do the little Crayad Dragon side quest. Spend like 12 hours doing that, but get a little cool rock. But it made me stop and I had to ask, when did this take place? Because Chewie was literally eating porgs on Achu before he ever felt guilty. And it felt like right after he felt guilty, they pretty much packed up and left. So I'm like, at what point was Chewie playing Kumbaya with the porgs? Like, that to me, I think I have an issue with that. Because to me, I feel like Chewie wouldn't be as friendly with the porgs while he's on Acho as he is later on the Millennium Falcon. Thank you. That was really hard. I was trying not to sneeze the whole time.
I mean, like I said, I haven't watched it, but I knew that it was about Chewie and the porgs. And it's like, there's a book too, which I haven't read. I have it sitting here. But it's like, when did Chewie all of a sudden like porgs? Like, it's almost as if they're presenting Chewbacca as being a big fan of porgs and like has porg pets and hangs out with porgs and plays poker with porgs or something.
I was expecting, like, in this video, the porg takes some wires out of the Falcon and leaves, and he's chasing it, trying to get the wires back. And I'm like thinking, like, the Chewbacca I'm thinking about would just destroy this thing. It's like, you're done. You're ripping up my ship. My ship means more to me than some little, you know, varmint. And yet, no, he goes out of his way, and he's, like, climbing up the thing and going to get this little tiny fabric down so the porgs can make a really nice nest for the baby porgs, because that's what they were using the wire for. Because, you know, there's only fabric everywhere else on the Falcon, so let's just, you know, go behind the metal and rip the wires out. I get the aspect of it being for Kitty, so I forgive it in that regard. But the porgs, I'm kind of over porgs. I think I'm there, man. I've hit porg fatigue.
Mark's out on Ewoks and porgs tonight. He's like,
I guess, he's
anything cute, he's getting done. I'm out.
I'll just keep it to my main protagonist.
Now, I haven't got a chance to watch these yet either. I'm sort of in the same boat. But I did see the art. They released the promo art for some of the episodes yesterday. And so I'm really curious about, what was art history about a little more?
So art history, that one's on Mandalore, and it's with Sabine and her brother.
Okay.
And they're like in a little Grand Canyon kind of thing. And there's a statue of the one of the first Mandalores, one of the Vizslas. And the Empire has set up a depot base basically on it. So when you're looking at it, like, at first I didn't realize what it was, because they've built the base around the head of the statue. So it kind of looks like you're like looking at what looks like a lightsaber hilt almost at first, but then when they break it off, you realize, oh, they've just built it all around the statue. So the interesting thing that I think was what made it great was that from Sabine's point of view, it was like, you know, it's not so much that Vizsla was someone that, you know, her family didn't get along with. It was, this is Mandalorian history, and they're desecrating our history, and we're not going to let that stand. Mm. And I thought that was a really cool, you know, story in and of itself. Yeah, it was really cool in that regard. And the disarming lesson was a lot like that too, because you had Ahsoka with that. She's training Ezra, and it's right after Ezra got his blaster saber, and she's asking, you know, hey, where did you get that? And he's like, Yoda, you know, Yoda taught me how to make, really, Yoda? Well, you know, his voice came to me on a temple. And so she pulls the crystal out and throws it. And this, you know, ignites her blade and starts coming at him. And she's like, you know, I'm going to teach you a lesson. He's like, Kanan never teaches me like this. He's like, well, maybe we'll do something different, you know. And eventually he kind of falls in one with the Force and realizes he can, you know, stay a step ahead of her if he just zones into that. It was a really cool moment. Kind of reminded me of a lot of ways of Eye Jedi when Karan Horn was talking about his circles of responsibility, mm-hmm. and how those would grow and shrink based on what he was doing and the circumstances around him. So I thought it was really cool in and of itself like that. It was a really cool way of bringing Ahsoka in. And again, the placement with Ezra's hair, that lightsaber, you knew when that took place, which for me, if you're going to have something like this that feels throwaway, having that makes it feel relevant.
Okay.
He's worth a lot to me. As you wish.
Okay, so I'll start off Boba's. I never start off Boba's Bounty, I don't think. But I'll start this one off.
Not unless Riley throws it at you.
Exactly. He's not here.
Usually it's Porg related when he does.
Well, and this is a Riley Borg. What's wrong with me? Porg, Borg, whatever. This is a Riley Boba's Bounty for me, because Riley's part of this whole thing. So nice. Monday evening, we got together with Michael and Christy Morris and Steve Glosson from Geek Out Loud. And we went to Dave and Buster's, and he was getting ready to drive first thing that next morning to head over to Texas. But we got a little get together to say goodbye to him. And we were playing Star Wars Battle Pod, and I have never played it before. And that was a whole lot of fun. I really enjoyed it.
So I've got to play that 3 times now, and I really got a kick out of it the first time I played it. The second two, though, I felt like it was that Dragon's Lair game where the guy was like, go left, go right kind of thing. I felt like even though I was flying, I felt like I wasn't really flying because there was so many things. Like I did the Death Star, the debris of the Death Star. There's no way in hell I would have flown through that. And I didn't bust into anything. I was like, this is pulling me through. Like I just have to pull the trigger down. Like I almost wish they would have made it a little more hands-on, you know? Yeah. Like I felt like it was almost Mario in the aspect of you were on the rails the whole time. You weren't going off the rails.
I thought I was doing really good, and then it said I failed. I was like, man, I really got a hang for this, man. Like, this is, like, I'm a natural. I'm doing really well. And I'm like, yes, yes, yes. And then when it ended, it said, you failed. And I was like, what?
You failed me for the last time. You're like, no, what did I do?
Yeah, so, judgmental.
No, but I love the way that it interclothes around you and stuff. The screens are big.
Oh, I know. Well, the first time I was in it, because Wally went to play it, and he says, come on, get in here. And I was like, okay. Yeah. And he closes the door, and I'm just standing there, and I thought maybe he was calling me in because it was like maybe a two-player thing or something. And I'm just standing there inside this little pod, and Michael Morris is knocking on the door, and he's like, what are you doing in there? And I'm like, I don't know.
See, I'm with you on a two-player game. Like, imagine that game, but instead of flying it, it's two people, and you're in the top and bottom turrets of the Falcon while Han and Chewie are flying you through some space battle, and it's your mission to keep the TIE fighters off your backside.
Yeah.
That would be so cool.
I think they should come up with Battle Porg. That would be a fun game, too.
Climb inside the Porg?
Yeah, you climb inside the Porg, and you just start shooting things as a Porg, and you go after all the Wookiees, and the ultimate goal is to get Chewbacca.
It's got to be like Rampage, though, where like some Imperial science thing up above drops some canister down, and one Porg grows really big.
All right. Well, Pete, what about you? Did anything that inspired you, or anything you bought, or anything Star Wars things that you did this week?
Well, we got the hands, I'm doing air quotes, the Han Solo card game. And so we're going over to family. We're going to go over to some family tomorrow night. I'm going to bring that with me. Hopefully we're going to play some fake Sabacc tomorrow night. So I'm pretty pumped about that.
Nice. Nice. Yeah, the fake. I saw a thing on that talking about somebody bought the rights to Sabacc and they're going after Disney for like, oh, this could get ugly or interesting very fast.
Yeah, I can't remember about that. This fake Sabacc, it isn't based on Star Wars. It's just had a similar name, right? Or is it Star Wars?
I think it's kind of the game. The home game, I think, is going to be loosely based off of the game they're playing in the movie. Mm-hmm. But it's going to have different rules. I think probably different scoring system. It seems like it's a pretty basic scoring system.
Now, what I was noticing with the movie, though, is it didn't seem to have any stabilizing fields. So I don't think we're going to have to worry about shifting cards and stuff, which to a degree, like that was part of the fun of the game, though.
Yeah, they're going very low tech. It seems like in the very low tech and tactile in the movie for that stuff. And that's sort of a more of a Western feel that I'm sure the Kasdans were kind of behind.
Yeah. Well, I know Legends had different versions that you could play of Sabacc where, you know, some were like that, some were less technical. So that would make sense. Like if you had like, you know, like Sabacc version 1 or something like that, where it's no stabilization fields, just cards.
All right, Mark. So what about you? What's your Boba's Bounty?
Well, my Boba's Bounty also has something to do with Riley. Riley managed to send me off the Sphero BB-9E that they sent us. They sent you, Bruce, I believe, got the BB-8 that we have discovered that you haven't had a chance to play with. And that's true. Had the choice at the time, because you had already snagged BB-8, that it was between R2 and BB-9E. And I was like, I'm going dark side. Like, I'm stupid like that. I think dark first, and then I'm like, but I'm not a bad guy. You know, so then, yeah, get BB-90 on Elk's thinking, I'm going to chase these Cheweenies. I got two little dogs. I'm going to chase them all through the house. BB-90 doesn't do well on the carpet. So oh, <really? laughs> I've got a small kitchen that I get to use BB-90 on. And the dogs, like, they chase him right into the corner, and then immediately they take off on the carpet. And I'm like, I can't chase you. Dang, I made a wrong choice. Like, Samsonite. Plus, I did not realize how hard it was going to be to drive that little ball. Like, he shifts his head. Like, I'm bouncing him off everything. I'm like, man, I blew it. I should have went with R2. I'm an astromech fool. Why I went with the new model was, yeah, but I don't regret it because it's pretty dang awesome. He's got the little base that he charges on, and you could put him in a interactive mode with humans. So I leave him on that, oh, yeah. And he's sitting on the base, and he just like looks around and stuff. I wish that they had a little microphone inside it. It was kind of a little bummer to find out that the phone made all the sounds, but it's cool because it comes with like 12 different BB-90 sounds and stuff. There's a lot of features I haven't got to use. And he also came with a little trainer. So you pop this little thing out and you set him in there and you can do an AR, augmented reality, where you drive around inside. Well, because it's BB-90, it's only the Supremacy, which I think that's one of the flaws. Sphero should allow you to play as any droid in any of the ship. It shouldn't have to be locked into that one, but it's pretty cool though. You get to sit there, and it's the only way I've been able to really practice driving BB-90. But unlike my kids with their learner's permit, I'm not getting any better with practice. I really blow.
Well, at least there's not a test that you have to get a license for.
Right? Because if that was the case, I don't think many of us Star Wars fans would be able to get these droids.
No, but I'll tell you that R2-D2.
Like, these are the droids you're looking for, but you don't have the skills, son.
That R2-D2, though, is really cool. I had no idea how cool that was going to be until Riley was playing with it, and I saw it in the kitchen floor rolling around and rocking back and forth. I mean, it had all like those Kenny Baker moves that you saw in, you know, the original Star Wars and stuff that they came up with. I was like, oh my gosh, like BB-8 and BB-9E, I thought, oh yeah, they roll all around. Those would be cool. R2-D2 probably is not as much fun, but I kind of wish I had the R2-D2. And just so you know, I did not. The reason I picked BB-8 was just because, for the reason I just said, but I didn't know that it was out of the three. Like, I knew there were three, but Riley just asked me, hey, they're sending us some to test. Which one do you want? He didn't. I thought it was like, if I said BB-8, you could say, like, we could all get BB-8s. I didn't know that he already had them, and I was picking, and you could get it. I felt bad afterwards. I'm like, oh, I didn't know. Like, I.
Well, the other thing, I was watching one of these reviews, and they will follow along with the films.
Yes.
And I was thinking, that's the other one I blew it. I'm like, which droid of these three droids is in every film? Like, no, I got BB-9E, and unfortunately, the movie he's in isn't even one you can watch with him yet. I'm like, we got to get an update on that Sphero, because I want, if he's only going to respond to one movie, I got to have it be the movie on the app. Like, I was laughing so hard when I saw that.
All right, well, we're going to go deep into the Becoming Solo featurette, but before that, speaking of Sphero, we're got a little message here about Sphero right now. This episode of the Star Wars Report is brought to you by Sphero. Now, with Sphero, you can get an R2-D2, a BB-8, or a BB-9E droid that you can control with your own smart device. And you can get R2-D2 right now for $99. And BB-8 you can get for $79. These are really great deals. And we can actually do even better than that. When you go to checkout at Sphero.com/Star Wars, you can save an additional 10% just because you're a listener of the Star Wars Report. When you go to checkout, use the code StarWarsReport10, and that's when you can receive the additional 10% off. Plus, you're also getting a free force band that helps you can control the droid. And these things are cute. You've seen them before, the little tiny R2-D2s and BB-8s out there. This is your chance to get it at a discount at 10% off. So we want to thank Sphero for their support of the Star Wars Report. And again, go visit Sphero.com/Star Wars. So about a week ago, there was a little featurette that came out. It's a little over, about 2 minutes long, you know, a little over that, I would say. But it's called Becoming Solo. And it's got Ron Howard in and some of the cast in. And they're giving us some looks into the Solo movie. And we've got some new images that we saw in the featurette. And just some background information. And so I put in notes so that the three of us can see exactly what it is that we're talking about here. And it starts off with Ron Howard saying, and I'm not going to imitate Ron Howard's voice because it's just, I just can't. It would be like Arrested Development. If I could do his voice, I would do Arrested Development. But he says, the Star Wars universe that we see in Solo is different from anything else that we've seen in any previous Star Wars movie.
The Star Wars universe that we see in Solo was different from anything else that we've seen in any previous Star Wars movies. The Empire controls everything. Everyone is struggling to survive, but we discover this incredibly free spirit.
We're meeting Han right before he becomes the Han that we know. You end up getting to see how this guy got to be the way he is. It's all part of this great expansion of the Han Solo world.
It's a rite of passage.
You look good.
The tests he needs to face, the challenges he has to endure. To become
Han Solo.
Those first encounters with Chewbacca.
You're gonna need a nickname, because I ain't saying that every time.
With the Millennium Falcon. With Lando Calrissian.
Did you win your ship playing cards?
I like this kid.
They're in this movie.
I'm a driver. A great pilot.
He's the most exciting character in the saga for me. You don't know what he's gonna do.
I'm a terrible person.
He's reckless.
He does these stupid things that should never work. And they do.
I'm fine!
And he does it with bravado. I might be the only person who knows what you really are.
What's that?
We see planet, which I have no idea what planet this would be. Of course,
it looks like the winter planet where we see the train. So it looks like it's probably the train ice planet, but
it could be. Yeah, it does look like it would be maybe an ice planet or a cold place, because the next thing we see is more like this industrial looking city. So I would expect that planet to look a little more dirty and industrial, maybe from space. So.
The one below that, though, I find interesting, because you could tell that those are the shield generators for Star Destroyer. But I'm like, what kind of crane is lifting that up? Is it like a maglev train? Because you don't see any cranes hanging out. So like, is that like a ship that's just lowering down a pole? I kind of want to know what's attached to
now,
that.
Now, do you think Han Solo is working in this construction area to build Star Destroyers when he was like with the Empire?
I want to say no. I kind of feel like I hope not, but maybe. They haven't really shown us enough about him being in the Empire. Like, I don't necessarily know if he really joined. Like,
yeah.
At one point I was leaning that way again, but...
Yeah, I'm assuming like the shots we get at the beginning that are the industrial cityscape and then the shipyards is Corellia, and we see him racing around with his speeder, so I'm assuming he's just a bit of a ne'er-do-well criminal, like, lowlife at this point. And that's when we see, like, the young version of him with, like, the whitish jacket on and Kira racing around in a couple shots.
Yeah.
Well, that thing with the crane, I thought maybe it was Chicago, because it looks like in the background of Sears Tower or something.
See, and you mentioned Corellia, and I was wondering, too, if this was going to be Corellia, because wasn't there also a shipyard on Corellia?
I get confused because there's so many shipyards in the EU, whether they were on the planet or whether they were like space docks above the planet.
Yeah.
I'm not sure
That's what had me, because this one shot, we see the Star Destroyer up above, which clearly its outer shell isn't completely on, and we're seeing the bridge tower basically being raised up. And I'm thinking, that's got to be a huge expenditure of resources to get those parts from the ground up into space when you could just be building it all up in space. Like, this, if this is a port, you almost get the feeling like it's like a smaller port, like one that isn't cranking out like thousands of ships, maybe like 50 a year kind of thing.
Yeah, I'm just trying to decide, is it really being built in the atmosphere of the planet, or is it in space above the planet? I mean, it looks like it's in the atmosphere.
Yeah, it looks like there are just various stages of development, and there's like little ships that look like that are attached to it, and they're building it right in atmosphere. So it seems like that's the way they're going with it.
Yeah, see, that's one thing I like about what they're doing with this movie is we're going to see elements of the Empire. I mean, of course, you know, the Empire's around during this time, but they could have made a solo movie with very little of the Empire in it. But we're going to get to see things we've never seen before with the Empire, which is really awesome.
Mm-hmm. Well, even with Corellia having a strong Imperial presence, I mean, that's different from Legends. I mean, in Legends, Corellia managed to stay completely, you know, independent during most of what was going on with the Empire. They were like a complete sovereign zone. Nobody really went in there for a long time. So, like, that's kind of interesting. I think one of the things that I'm most stoked about is the little dice. Like, I want to know if he buys that somewhere, or maybe, you know, Kira gives him the dice. Like, I feel like now the dice have more significance than ever, because up until The Last Jedi, I didn't even know that dice exist. I'm like, what is Han was one of my favorite characters, and there's so many things about him that I never realized before.
See, I think it's funny you said that, because I didn't know, I don't remember when I found out that the dice existed, but it was, you know, many, many, many years after the original Star Wars movie came out. But you don't really see it very well. I mean, you don't, it's not something you really notice. Then all of a sudden they play it up in The Last Jedi, and my wife was like, mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, the dice, you know. I often wonder what was, you know, up with those or whatever. I'm like, you didn't know about any dice? What are you talking about? You couldn't see, like, I don't know. She acted like it was a prominent feature in the other movies. I said, you can barely see them in the movies. And now it's prominent in The Last Jedi, which I said to her, which I think is really odd, because most people don't know those dice really existed. And now you've given them a purpose. Mm-hmm. Now we're doing this, which is a prequel to all of that. And there's now a tie-in between Solo and The Last Jedi. We start with Solo and the dice, and we end after Solo's death with the dice.
Yeah. If there's ever going to be any sentimental reason for keeping them, this is the opportunity to weigh that down now, you know? Like, I mean, we could find out that it's something major, you know? Like, maybe it was... In Legends, there was another Wookiee that he had grown up with, and that was part of where he learned Shyrook and why he was so close. But if he had something like that, and he got those from one of those type of characters that raised him kind of thing, or was the closest to a parent figure, and we find out that that's what that signifies for Han, you know, that, to me, that would be kind of cool.
Yeah, I don't know how spoilery you want to get, but I was listening to a podcast today that they interviewed John Kasdan, who's the co-writer on it, and he kind of talked about the fact that, as we probably would expect, we're not going to find out like who Han's parents are, or really find out much about his background until we meet him in this movie.
Nice.
So I wouldn't be surprised, like, I'm just spitballing here, but I wouldn't be surprised if the dice are possibly something that Kira gives him, like... Mm-hmm. Because it sounds like they haven't seen each other for a number of years, so maybe they were together and, like, she ditched him to go off and do something and gave him, like, the dice as, like, a goodbye.
Yeah, I actually like that idea, but then it's kind of weird to think that, you know, he yeah. gives him to Leia. Like, you know, oh, yeah, Han's old girlfriend's dice. Thanks, Luke.
She's like, these are as hollow as your Force illusion, Luke.
But now, are these dice available anywhere in retail to buy?
Okay, so when I saw these dice, I immediately went out and grabbed the dice that came with those old figures to see if they matched. They do on one side.
I have a feeling Pete's got a good answer. Look!
I got some off of Etsy. But,
nice!
There's the interesting thing, if you go to the AMC fan event screenings, that are the 6 o'clock screenings on Thursday night, they're gonna have a goodie box, and in the box is supposed to be a replica set of the dice. But I don't know about them being available anywhere else, and I can't go to the screening, so I can't get any, so I'm very upset.
Oh, I'm upset too.
Why am I not going to the fan event? I said that last time. Oh well.
We don't think outside the box.
Yeah, and if you want the full details, it's on StarWars.com. They have an announcement, and it talks about what the theater chains are doing, and that's included in it. So,
that's awesome. You know, one thing I will admit, okay, I have been on the fence about Aaron Wright. He wasn't my first choice, but I am starting to hear Han Solo out of his voice. I'm still not seeing Han Solo yet, but I blame that on little snippets of trailers and stuff. I think once we see him walking a bit more, we see a full scene, I think I might start to lower those last barriers, because I am starting to hear it. And I like that a lot.
Yeah, he's really growing on me. It's like I'm starting to really relate his image to Han Solo. It's like even when I was reading Han Solo's Revenge, I was not necessarily picturing Harrison Ford or Aaron Alden. Wait, what's his name? Alden Ehrenreich. It was like I was kind of picturing a blend of the two.
There have been some really cool side-by-side shots of the two actors there, Harrison Ford and him, just like they've done with Luke, young Luke and old Luke. You know, the other one, too, that jumped out to me was the centipede-looking creature in one of the scenes. And they were talking about, you know, he's going to be facing tests and have challenges and stuff he has to endure to become Han Solo. And it immediately made me think of Legends Han Solo and Legends Han Solo's hatred for bugs. I was like, this could be a really cool moment here.
Well, it looks like this is kind of like the job of the Hutt we're getting for this film. Instead of getting another Hutt, we're getting this kind of weird monster crime boss.
Borger Lab will know the truth.
I thought it looks like a big Diagnoga, like from the trash compactor.
But it's got like arms. It looks like it might have armor on. I'm like, what is going on with this thing? This is wild.
Yeah, at one point I'm like, is it coming out of the ground? Is that water? Or is he just standing on the ground? It was hard to tell. But I thought immediately the same thing with the Dioga's eye. Like, he definitely has that feel to the model, at least.
I wonder if this is like Mommy Diagnoga or...
Yeah. The scene with Chewbacca, those first encounters there, I immediately noticed Chewbacca has no bandoliers. I'm like, oh, okay. Like, maybe we'll find out why. Like, I have a feeling, like, if Han saves him from slavery, this is probably right on the heels of that. Because if anyone's going to have just a Wookiee just basically walking around in his birthday suit, it's going to be the Empire. They're not going to give them bandoliers and other things that they could take and use as potential weapons. A Wookiee is a weapon enough, right? So that would be that moment where you see, which would also make sense why Chewie wouldn't immediately put on the traditional one that we think of and love, because it probably wouldn't be available yet. He's probably got to find Mala and get it from her, maybe, or something along those lines. But I also, it was that scene where I heard Han Solo and he's like, yeah, I'm not gonna call you that, we're gonna have to get you a nickname. I was like,
so is okay, Chewbacca his nickname? Like, why does he have to give him a nickname? Or is Chewie the nickname?
Chewie's the nickname, because Chewbacca, he's like, I'm not saying that every time.
it's like two syllables, I don't understand.
Right? Yeah. Unless it's like Lumpawaru, where Chewbacca is just like the shortened part, like it's like Wrako Chukabako Chewbacca Woo. You're like, that's your name? Yeah, we're gonna go with Chewbacca for short, yeah. Like Thrawn or something.
Well, I liked earlier on. You see, AT-ST. I thought that was pretty cool, and it looks like Han's like in a battle as a Imperial officer of some type, or not an officer, but.
Like the AT-ST driver. Yeah. I've got that figure sitting behind me right now. It's like, dude, that's kind
of
cool.
The cool thing is, like, when you see some shots of it, this is like a double-barreled AT-ST. So it's another slight modification that we're getting of that.
I did not notice that.
This looks like it's the Mimban planet with, like, the mud troopers and stuff. That's where they're going to be. So.
Oh, yeah, that's right. The Mimbians are going to play a part.
And we see this Han in this outfit later on in the teaser with Beckett and Val as well.
Yeah, I saw the one where Beckett was wearing the costume. You know, when you see Han, what's interesting is the goggles he has there look very similar to Rey's that she cobbled together from the Stormtrooper helmets. Like,
I was thinking the exact same thing, yeah. And maybe that's where she got it. Maybe it was Han's goggles from this movie that she found later.
Maybe Ezra took them and dropped them off on Jakku for her because he knew she'd get blinded by the light.
Yes, because Ezra's going through that portal just grabbing all kinds of things and putting them in different times.
Well, think about it. Ezra was always collecting random crap anyway.
Star Wars hoarders.
Right? The struggle is real. Trust me. Look at the shelves behind me.
Oh, man. Yeah, and then Han Solo and... Lando Calrissian meeting for the first time, and so it was like, did you win your ship playing cards? And he's like, I like this kid, you know. It's like you could see Solo, and I like that he calls him a kid, you know.
Yeah,
like he's, you know, you're a younger guy than me, and you're just a kid. I'm experienced. I've been around. I got capes.
I kind of hope that somewhere along the line Han finds out they're the same age and calls him on it, though.
Han says, like, yeah, I'm the same age, I just look better than you.
And I just love how smooth Lando is in this scene, because he's just sort of, he's kissing up on some weird looking alien.
Yeah, that's what surprised me about the last shot. Like, from Lando's point of view, man, he is a male. Like, I can't find a polite word to use on the Star Wars report, so we're just going to leave it open. Promiscuous is probably not as far as Lando would like to go with people. Like, I'm like, dang, man, you are. And luckily, he gets blocked every single time, but in Lando's mind, whoo, there ain't nothing touching Lando.
Yeah.
Except for what Lando wants to touch.
I have to tell you, one of my favorite movies last year, and I've mentioned this on the show before, is Baby Driver. And there's just certain aspects of this movie that reminds me of Baby Driver. And just the way he's driving around. I mean, this is, this has been in movies like this all the, for years.
Yeah.
Of the rebel driving around, being all cocky and his driving skills and everything. But there's just aspects of it that just reminds me so much of Baby Driver. And it just gets me excited.
Well, and that scene where he throws the DL blaster up and Lahan catches it, like, he just comes spinning around like no moves. Like, so I'm a big fan of Firefly, right? And they mimicked Captain Malcolm Reynolds after Han Solo. And one of the first things he does in one of the first episodes, he comes in and he pulls the gun right off his hip and shoots somebody that's got someone else. Just smooth as could be. But they mimic it after Han. And so this moment, like, for me, that came full circle. It's like, oh, man. This makes up for the whole who shot first, who shot second. This scene looks great. The man can handle a blaster.
You know, Donald Glover also says in here that we're meeting Han before he becomes the Han that we know. So I wonder if what Han's going to be like and how he grows through this movie. Is he going to be a good guy that kind of goes bad, or was he a really bad kid that just kind of found the right path or whatever? What do you think?
A hopeful kid who finds cynicism. That's kind of what I'm thinking.
Yeah, I think Mark's probably close to it. I think it's probably going to be the guy that's a little naive and a lot more like Luke was in A New Hope than Han was in A New Hope. And we're seeing he had a much rougher, it looks like he's going to have a much rougher upbringing, but he's still going to be kind of generally optimistic about things and how the galaxy beats him down over the next couple decades.
Which would work, too, for the relationship between Han and Luke, because then Han could actually see a little of himself in Luke and be like, pulling that mentor thing would make more sense, the whole naming him kid. Like, I think that that's a great opportunity there if they play with that.
Yeah, I wonder if Lando kind of mentors Han a little, and then Han turns around and mentors Luke. Because Lando calls Han kid, and then Han calls Luke kid. But, Luke is a kid, basically, to Han at that point anyway. So,
You just made me think, though, like that the whole you got a lot of guts showing up here after what you pulled. What if what he pulled was stripping the Falcon to make it look like some, beat-up freighter? Like, it was all for one job! You ruined my ship for one job!
But, I hadn't thought about it, but this is like the New Hope of Han Solo story. Like, Luke kind of grows into his own in A New Hope, but we're getting that with Han, because Ron Howard says the tests he needs to face, the challenges he has to endure to become Han Solo, and how he first encounters with Chewbacca and the Millennium Falcon and Lando Calrissian, like, this is his coming of age movie. This is, what we saw Luke go through. Now we're getting to see Han do it, except there's no, I guess, I was going to say there's no Obi-Wan Kenobi, but I guess in a sense there is.
Beckett.
Yeah.
Yeah, Beckett. Or even Lando, you could say. You could definitely make
or
that
even
argument.
Or even Kira. I don't know. Kira might be one too. That kind of. I think he might be mentored by all these different characters in some respect.
I just want to know what it is in the story plot that when it's all said and done flips the script so hard that makes him so cynical, because like he's the one telling Chewie, like, you keep saying that, like, and he's got good feelings, but he doesn't when this is over. He never has a good feeling again aside from Leia.
Yeah, they're setting it up where they've got the crime boss River Voss, and he's putting it, and they're putting a recruiter to do a job for him. And then, so it was like, is Voss going to, and then we have, I think it was in one of the earlier ones where Beckett's talking about how everybody's going to betray you, expect everybody to betray you. And so it's like, is everybody in this movie, except for Chewbacca, basically going to end up betraying Han in some way, either big or small? And it's that by the end of the season, like, you know what? I'm out of here.
Or they betray Chewbacca, too, and that's why Han and Chewbacca are so close, because they were the ones that didn't betray each other.
Yeah. They
became friends. Now I'm going to cry. And, he's a naked Chewbacca. That's kind of weird. I mean, he's not shaved down. He's still furry. He's just, doesn't have his gear.
Yeah.
Well, Han's wrapped in a blanket. And this train heist thing, too. Like, what is it? It's like, it looks like the ship, like, carries, like, a piece of the train up into the air. Like, maybe there's a bomb or something.
I'm thinking what happens is they're stealing a whole segment from the train.
There's, like, gold or something.
And
in there.
Taking off with it. Yeah. Kind of reminds me of Scoundrels. I mean, the plot there was they basically got the whole safe rolling. It was a giant ball. So they're like, let's get it moving. I could see him doing something like that, because really on that train, the only way you're going to get away is to get that and go. You either take the whole thing or you take the goods from the inside out. So to me, it just makes more sense. Take the whole thing and go. You don't have as much to unhook. Uncouple the front part, uncouple the back part, and fly off.
I keep thinking this is probably a linear storytelling. We start off with Han in his early days and we progress as it goes along. But since this is a different Star Wars movie, it doesn't have to follow the exact mold of the saga movies. It could be that we get to meet this Solo in his later years of this movie. And then there's all these flashbacks to his earlier days based on what he's doing. I wonder if I don't think they'll take that approach. But, I mean, they could go with a different format of storytelling in a Star Wars movie, and that would be a little off. I don't know how that would play for me.
Well, I've said from the start, how cool would it be if we found out that this is all Elder Han Solo telling Rey and Finn about some of the legends? They're all true, every one of them. And it was like, by the time it's over, we're back to that scene, and we find out that it was all him telling
her. You mean like Princess
all
Bride?
About the...
Yeah,
exactly, like the Princess Bride, because what she says, she's like, isn't this the one that did the Kessel Run in 14 parsecs? He's like, 12! he could be telling her the actual story of how it happened.
Yeah, that would have been that's my first thought when we heard we were getting the movie as well. I was like, that'd be a really cool framing device to actually have, like, Harrison Ford actually open the movie. That'd be kind of crazy.
I'd be down.
I think it'd be funny.
Even if they didn't have him open the movie and just where at the end you found out it was all flashback. Either way, I'd be down for that. I think that's just a great thing.
Or it starts
off with
a little tiny Kylo Ren. Well, of course, you're not Kylo Ren, but Ben Solo in bed. Daddy, tell me a story. And Han's like, okay, kid, let me tell you about my early days. And then he's like, Daddy, that scared me. I'm going to go to the dark side.
It's all handsome. It always was. I'm a driver. I'm a great pilot, but I'm a terrible father. That's another thing that the last shot is doing, too. Han does not think very highly of himself. I wonder if somewhere along the lines he gets a dose of reality in all this, because that whole I'm a driver, I'm a great pilot, when you look at the scene where he's saying it, it's like he's almost pained in the fact that they don't believe him. You can just see the anguish on his face.
Oh, did you finish reading the last shot?
No, I'm almost halfway into it. The problem I've had is all this training and stuff. Every time I would normally be doing my reading, I'm getting ready for camp.
Have you read it, Pete?
Yeah, I did.
Ah, what'd you think?
I really enjoyed it. It had much more of a kind of fun, pulpy feel like the old novels did. So I really enjoyed it. I really liked some of the character work, and the Han and Lando stuff was really good. I liked the villain. The villain was kind of just like insane. Nice. My issues with it were pretty minor, so I would definitely recommend it. And I think it gives us sort of there's some plot stuff and there's some weird stuff, but the big thing out of that book was that it has me really excited for L337. She, like, just awesome. And there's, like, I don't want to spoil it, but there's something they do in the book with her that sets up potential future storytelling that I'm just like, yes, I want this story now. So
nice. Yeah,
I just started it, so I've only read the first two chapters. So, ooh, now I'm excited. So when we're done this show, I'm going to go read it. As a matter of fact, I think we are done this show.
I think that's about right myself. I got to get loaded up and get camping. I got my copy of that actually in bag. I'm ready to read it tonight.
There you go. I'm going to go watch Forces of Destiny.
Yeah. You get it done in 20 minutes.
Well, Pete, if anybody wants to find you online, what's the best way we can find you?
You can find me on Twitter at The Pete Awakens, or you can go over to and search for the Star Wars post on Facebook or YouTube. I do a video show over there. And then also RebelsReport.com for TV, movie, and book coverage.
Nice. Yay. Well, thank you so much for joining us. We want to bring you back sometime, and we definitely want to hear what you thought of Solo.
Awesome. Sounds good. Thanks for having me on tonight, guys.
Thank you. And yeah, Mark, man, you can be found there on Twitter.
Well, I'm always a Logical Rogue 2 out there. You can find me on Facebook, Twitter, and if you see me on Xbox, it's not Illogical Rogue 2 because somehow I screwed up and I go by the Red Eye, Odd Red Eye Jedi. I have no idea
where that's that the name of that saddle.
I don't know. And I'm mad that I don't think I should have to pay $10 to change back to a name that I didn't change from. Wow. So yeah. But if you play me on PlayStation 4, it may be my son. He plays a lot of Fortnite as me. So I'm doing really good, even though I suck at that game.
Awesome. And you can find me on Twitter at Admiral_Rex. And we'll see everybody next week. We're going to be talking more Solo. And we have a feature with John Mills and Matt Rushing from Aggressive Negotiations that will talk about future Star Wars movies. We'll check that out. Nice. So until next time, many Bothans died to bring you this podcast.
Hey, Bruce, did you go by Admiral Rex on the old forums?
No. I don't think so.
I could have swore I knew an Admiral Rex back in the day.
I mean, if I did, I wasn't, posting much, so I probably wouldn't have stood out. Now, I was Hunter Rex. I was Hunter Rex on those forums. That's what it was. And then okay. I changed it when Twitter came. I decided to get rid of the Hunter part and made it Admiral.
You gave yourself a promotion.
Oh,
nice.
Yeah, promotion. Well played.
And Hunter Rex was my dog's name as a kid. His first name was Hunter. His middle name was Rex. That's where all that comes from.
See, now that's a good transition. I went from Illogical Rogue 2 to junk.
To junk.